Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. My buddy Andy Shea is off this week, so we have a replacement. That is Dwayne Karshner. So first off, you might be asking, who is Dwayne Karshner? Well, I'll give you the quick rundown. Dwayne is a friend of mine. Let's see. High school rival.
Correct.
College roommate.
Correct.
I guess softball, basketball roommate, or teammates.
Correct.
Golf partner. Fellow Nittany Lion, obviously, and also a Mets fan.
Yes, we are still admitting that part too. Painfully.
Just barely do we admit that. And before we get in, I thought it would be great, Dwayne, to have you on because as you're a fan, okay, and that's who we're talking to. Want to get your perspective on the game last week. But before we get there, just as a fellow Nittany Lion fan, Mets fan, has there ever been a more painful sports weekend than this last weekend?
This has been a very, very painful weekend, to say the least. So, yeah, but, you know, we survived. The sun came up the next day and ready to move on, to say the least. Now, did you check the baseball scores from last night?
No, I don't care. Well, I'll tell you what, I did know that the Yankees lost, so I'm happy about that.
Very good. Understood. That's the way to check the baseball scores.
But this moving on thing, I'm not ready to move on yet, okay? I am just not ready for that.
Let's talk about it.
Well, actually, I want to start this way, though. How about we start on a positive note? We will talk about the game, obviously. But let's talk about the day itself, pregame. I got into town, into State College on Friday. There was just a buzz in State College. It was just the vibe was fantastic. I assume you arrived normal time early on Saturday, spent the day tailgating. What was the day like prior to getting into the stadium?
Well, it was actually all of our tailgates are amazing. I'll say the one big difference this week was our menu. Believe it or not, we had duck tacos for
duck
the menu.
Tacos, get out.
Duck tacos. And they were actually, I'd never had duck before, to be honest with you. But obviously, the timing was right to try it. And they were amazing, absolutely amazing. I will say that our Oregon friends who stopped by, they did not partake. They did not want to try a duck taco, but they were great. And the weather, fabulous. The tailgate is always a lot of fun. I mean, the whole day was amazing going into the game.
It was a sensational atmosphere. I know at our tailgate, we had the best time. It was great. We had Oregon people. We had, Dwayne, people who were just random people from like Boston, from Michigan, who came in just because they wanted to see a whiteout. Groups of guys who every year they plan a college football trip somewhere. This was their trip this year, and they were just ecstatic to be there. And it just went to the atmosphere pregame. Now, you enter the building, get inside. It's a whiteout. What was that like for you?
You know, I've been to every whiteout, but it just seems like it continues to get bigger and better every year. I will say the one thing that as I get older, maybe my tolerance for noise has gone down a little bit. The night before, I actually went to a Styx concert at the Bloomsburg Fairgrounds, and we had tickets on the track, and it was very loud, and my ears were ringing going into Saturday. So, but that was nothing compared to the deafening noise inside that stadium, which was incredible. And, you know, to add to the whole environment, you know, having, 200 or so recruits there to see that environment, hear that noise, you know, just a very impressive atmosphere to witness a college football game.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, the recruits that were on the sideline. I was talking with Mike Villagrana, who's on our show, executive director at Happy Valley United, the Penn State Collective. So he's heavily involved in the recruiting. And he talks about just, it's a logistical nightmare to get that together. Could you imagine that, bringing in 200 recruits, family members? It's wild and a lot of work. But if you listen to these recruits, whenever there's a commit and you ask them about their commitment to Penn State and why, how often they bring up the whiteout experience, don't they?
Right. And it did not disappoint as far as the environment. I mean, the weather could not have been better. I'm a big fan of having whiteouts as early in the season as you can, so it's not cold and you don't have, thousands of orange hunting jackets, in the stands. It was perfectly white with a little bit of disgusting green here and there, but overall, it was just a great environment.
You are getting old, Dwayne. In the first 5 minutes of the show, you talked about the noise being too loud, the weather being warm enough.
I'll also add, what a great business opportunity to open up a hearing loss clinic in State College. I mean, think about it. Think about the opportunity.
Get to your audience, and that would be the place to do it. Nice. All right. Unfortunately, we have to talk about the game itself. Before I ask you details, just overall reaction to the game itself.
Yeah, where do you start? I think this has been a trend in our quote unquote big games. It just seems like we play not to lose instead of coming out in an attacking type mode. I thought the first three quarters our offense was very vanilla, semi-predictable, very close to the vest, playing not to lose instead of, going out there trying to force the issue. And I see that a lot in the big games, like against Ohio State. I think that happens a lot. So, I would like to see more of an attacking type offense, similar to what we saw at the end of the game where I think we scored in three successive possessions. And again, some of that may be the Oregon defense, maybe loosening up a little bit, but just want to see more of a vertical game, trying to push things downfield. And I think we only threw one pass over 20 yards, and that resulted in a touchdown. I am sure that we called more than that. However, you have to give some credit to Oregon. There was a lot of hurried passes, by Aller. So I'm sure we called more than one play that was trying to get more than 20 yards down the field. It's just, it didn't happen. And, having 2 weeks to prepare for a game and to come out and not stretch the field more than we did was disappointing to the casual fan.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's interesting. You say they had 2 weeks to prepare. I say they had 8 months to prepare.
Yeah, I agree.
And, everything pointed towards this game. And, we're told this offensive coordinator, a genius, and creative. I didn't see creative. And I've also, Dwayne, I'm glad you brought up the conservative play. And when I've talked to people throughout this time, a lot of people, it's an easy target. James Franklin, here's his record against top teams. And I'll say, okay, you say he can't win the big game. Point out to me what he's done wrong in those big games. And they usually have no answer. If there is an answer, if the question were asked to me, it is that conservative play. I feel like he gets conservative with those games. And part of it is, gee, they're so good, we can't give them an opening. Well, but that's how you win games, how you won games against everybody else. How about doing it here? The other thing, and this is something else, and I'm often accused of being a James Franklin apologist, Wayne, with his record against top 10 teams. I just read this. I wasn't aware of this. I knew it was the case on a lot of them. His last 20 regular season games against a top 10 opponent, Penn State was the underdog all 20 games. Right. This was his first game against a top 10 opponent where he was actually favored.
Correct. Yeah, and you know, you think about it, we lost to the number six team in the country in two overtimes, and our offense really only played one quarter. You know, so I don't know what the answer is. I, as a coach, you know, only at the high school level, you know, sometimes your plan is fine, and it just, and you just don't execute. But I will say, in this case, I don't think it's about the Jimmy and the Joes. I think we have the right players in place. It's about the X's and the O's in my mind. And, you know, we need to do better with finding a way to make these studs successful. And there's a lot of teams that would love to have, you know, the 4 and 5 star guys that we have on our team. And they find ways to win. And we just need to dig deep, you know, look in the mirror and say, what went wrong, and really go after fixing it. Because this is, it's getting old, and it's starting to affect, you know, the fan base with respect to our success in big time games.
Well, and the defense allowing 17 points to a team like Oregon, when your offense is doing very little and giving the ball back to Oregon so often, I have no issue with the defense. That offense, though, there's, Dwayne, there's just way too much talent there to right. perform the way they did, like you said, for the first three quarters. So does it really just come? I think there's a lot of credence to that just let loose. Drew Aller seems to be a different quarterback when he's in the two-minute offense.
I agree. I agree. And, you know, if you look at the specifics, in my mind, you know, a couple of things stick out offensively. And first of all, you know, nothing, I'm not against any of these players. I love the personnel that we have in place. Singleton off tackle just isn't effective. I mean, if you look at the numbers, and it's not just against Oregon, you know, you can look at our first three games and, you know, you hear people calling them cupcakes, but we weren't overly successful with our run game in those games either. You know, 4th and 1, Singleton was stopped on a huge play for us. And if it wasn't for a push by, I think it was Reynolds, came up behind him and pushed him over the line, you know, we would have been stopped on a 4th down, a very critical 4th down for us trying to make a comeback. Singleton is great in space. You know, Catron Allen up the middle, no problem. I mean, he's a stud. I think Singleton is more of a finesse runner and shows lots of speed. We just have to get him on the outside, and off tackle just doesn't seem to be a winning combination for us.
All right, Dwayne, that's going to be the last word for quarter number one. A lot more to go over when we come back after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He's my college roommate, Dwayne Karshner. Dwayne, absolutely fantastic to have you on here talking Penn State football. Unfortunate it was after a loss. And we were talking about just how good, at least on paper, this Penn State offense appears to be. My take on it is same as you, getting conservative. It feels like they want to establish the run so badly, and you've got a great offensive line, two stud running backs, in theory that should be working, but it's not. How about flipping the script a little bit? How about throw the ball on first down, throw the ball to open up the run? And I think Drew Allen would be better off. I think the running game would be better off, but I have not received that call yet from James Franklin for advice.
You need to sit by your phone. I'm sure it's coming.
I've got the phone right here. Perfectly willing and ready to give them advice. I'm still waiting for the call. Let's talk about a few more things that went on in this game, though. As James Franklin, Drew Aller are lightning rods. They both, they're tied at the hip. They were getting just the national narrative. Neither one could win a big game. To me, the ultimate was a week ago before the game, Wall Street Journal, of all places, has an article about Drew Aller incapable of winning the big game. Okay. That's the narrative. How much credence do you put into it on James Franklin, on Drew Aller, and their inability to win the big game?
Well, I think you pointed out earlier that we were only favored in one of those games. So, but you know, the fans are frustrated, and that frustration is warranted. I still believe he's a good coach that gets too conservative in big games. And there comes a time where he has to adjust. If he continues to do this same, you know, have the same mentality of being conservative and playing not to lose, it's going to continue. And I haven't seen any changes yet. You know, he keeps reminding us of all the good things that have happened in the last 12 years. And there has been plenty of good things. And he is an excellent recruiter. But quite frankly, we're at a point now where no one cares about his record versus Rutgers and Northwestern. You know, 15 consecutive losses against top six teams. That's very telling, and adjustments need to be made.
And I put it out there in talking about those games where, as I said earlier, he's not been favored in most of those games. There's actually been a talent disparity when you talk about playing Ohio State. They have more talent. Most teams, their record against Ohio State is not very good. My issue, though, is he's had opportunities in these games, double-digit leads in the fourth quarter, or in this game against Oregon, yeah, he got down, but they ended up catching up late in the game, tying the game, having the opportunity to win again. And let me ask you just a couple of little points during the game, because I've heard this from a lot of people since the game. You score a late touchdown, 30 seconds left in the game to make it 17-16. Do you go for 2 points at that point, Dwayne?
Yeah, it's easy. This is some Monday morning quarterbacking here. It's easy to look back and say, wouldn't it have been nice had we ended a game there? Putting myself in Franklin's shoes, I personally would not have gone for two. You know, you tie the game, you have momentum on your side. You have 111,000 people dressed in white on your side. You know, Oregon had to have been reeling a little bit at that point. I really liked our chances in overtime. You know, it didn't happen, but I, you know, looking back at it, I would have made the same decision. Unfortunately, it just didn't turn out in our favor.
I'm with you on that also. I think all the momentum was with Penn State, the crowd, home field, everything. And I'll tell you what, when Penn State in the first overtime scores that touchdown in front of the student body, you had to feel pretty good, pretty confident about it. By the way, I know it's hypothetical, but could you imagine him going for two and not making it with the crowd?
Yeah, that would have been horrible in many fronts. You know, I mean, who knows what goes through his mind at the time, and did they make that decision ahead of time whether they would, you know, go for two or not? But you're right. It would have been death to him. Not death, but it would have been horrible had he have gone and not made it. You know, it would have all fell on his shoulders at that point.
Let's at least say
he allowed the team to decide.
Yes, it would have been devastating is the word I would use if they didn't make it. A couple things went on during the game. One, the controversial overturning of Oregon going in to score, fumble, Penn State recovers, brings it back to at least midfield, and it went to review. This was the case where they're running back, not as he fumbled was he down, but a couple steps earlier did his knee hit the ground. That's what they were looking at. That was the basis of overturning that call. What was your take on that?
Yeah, and, you know, this game's going to be remembered as the difference in winning and losing was a blade of grass, which is unfortunate. You know, in my mind, you know, when you're in the stadium, you can't tell. You know, everybody thought it was the timing of the fumble, but, you know, looking back at it, it was much earlier when he ran into the line of scrimmage and his knee came close, if not touched, a blade of grass. In my mind, the call on the field was it was a fumble. Was it an egregious, overturn? I don't think it was a situation where they should have overturned it personally. It's not sour grapes. It's just looking back at it. It just was too close to overturn. I personally would not have overturned it. Obviously, I'm a biased fan. But it just wasn't one of those situations where it warranted overturning a call.
I'm with you on that, too. Watching the game live, I thought he originally, watching it live, I thought he was down. And then the play continued. I'm like, how could that play continue? He was down. You know, the body action, the way he looked, sort of crouching down to that one knee. Credit to the running back to be able to keep his balance without his knee hitting the ground and moving on. The problem is then in watching the replay, I'm like, oh, I'm not so sure. Credit the officials for letting the play go on. Them overturning it, though. I do think, though, if they had ruled them down, you can't overturn that either.
Correct.
Whatever way they called it on the field, it should have been the call. The other controversial part with the officials, by the way, just as a last note on that call that they overturned, the ACC now in their telecast, they broadcast the audio, the whole conversation between the official on the field and the review center. I think this is a perfect example of why they need to do that. And I think you were the one who said you looked it up. Actually, knee on the blade of grass means they're down, correct?
Correct. That's what I've, after looking up the rule, because it obviously bothered me, it did say any part of the turf, whether it be, you know, an AstroTurf or a blade of grass, is considered down. But again, looking at the replays, you can almost see a shadow, I thought, between his knee pad and the grass. So I'm still not convinced it even touched a blade of grass, but they obviously saw something in the views that they looked at to determine that he was down. So it's a very difficult call. And can you put yourself in that referee's shoes, telling 111,000 fans that no, we're going to give the ball back to Oregon? That wouldn't have been easy for him, but I would not have been in that position. Play on. That was a fumble.
Well, the thing to me, too, is if you're making a call on a replay based on whether not his knee hitting the solid ground, but a blade of grass, really? Okay, that's enough. You feel like you see enough to see it hit a blade of grass. But I would have liked to have heard that conversation where at the review center, and even them saying, hey, the rule is if one official says, well, it didn't go all the way to the ground, but I believe it touched a blade of grass. And someone saying, well, that's enough to be considered down. I would have loved to have heard that conversation. The other controversy with the officials, Dwayne, it's like Denai Dennis Sutton has become the new Abdul Carter.
Yes, yes.
So much holding, and the one play specifically where the quarterback escapes to his right, ends up a 20-some yard completion. It was a huge play. was that not an obvious call? And by the way, if you do a screenshot of it, the official is standing right there watching.
Right. And I'll tell you what, I hate to be that fan that you know, starts calling out holding calls, because there's holding calls everywhere. Some are so much more blatant than others. That one was as blatant as you can get. The screenshot that you're talking about, I believe I saw also, it appears the referee's looking right at that and did not call it, which, you know, made it very frustrating. I'll say the interesting part of it was, you know, him then having an injury on the field, allowing the scoreboard operator to play it over and over and over again for all the fans, you know, to see. And you could see the referees looking up at the scoreboard also. I'm sure they didn't appreciate, you know, that being shown on the big screen, but I'm glad they did get to see it, because it was definitely a blown call. You know, obviously Oregon fans will start looking for pictures of us holding them. And I'm sure it happened and didn't get called. However, I can't think of a bigger play that we needed that penalty called, because it was 3rd and 3. The play ended up gaining 23 yards, and it led to their first touchdown. So definitely had a huge impact on the game, and obviously very disappointed that call was not made.
And you make a good point there. It was at a critical juncture, but to me, I thought the more important part to it is, as you mentioned, there could be holding called on practically every play. If it's in the internal part of the line, it could be hard to see. It could be irrelevant. But here you had a situation where a defensive end against the left tackle out on an island, very obvious to see, and a major effect on the play itself. That is where you absolutely have to call it. All right, Dwayne, that's it for quarter two. When we come back, we're going to go with Ask Dwayne when we're back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dwayne Karsher. It's quarter three of the show. You know, traditionally that means it's Ask Andy. Today, calling a variable on the field. We're changing Ask Andy to Ask Dwayne.
Bring it. I'm ready.
All right. That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear.
At least I have a good attitude. Hopefully I have good answers too.
I could take a shot at Andy here, but I won't. I'll let it go. We're counting on you though today, Dwayne. Let's start with Ryan in Reynoldsville. Andy and Jim, throughout most of Franklin's tenure, quarterback play has been good at best and below average at worst. What does the program need to do differently to achieve championship caliber quarterback play? Man, we came right out of the gates with a tough one for you, Dwayne.
Wow. I'm not sure I have that answer. Obviously, I'm back to the X's and O's and kind of opening up the playbook, you know, allowing him to go downfield. First of all, we need better offensive line play. You know, it's easy to go after the quarterback when you're unsuccessful, but he didn't have a lot of time. If you look at how many hurries he had in that game, you know, it was just too many. We need to get him more time. If that means keeping some of the running backs in for pass protection to give him that time, that's part of it. But I think a lot of it has to do with developing quicker plays for him to release the ball. I will say his short passes, his accuracy on short passes has not been great. It's just something that they're going to have to work on, and just the need to stretch the field better. We got to get the ball downfield to loosen up the defense a bit, because he's just under too much pressure.
I do think he has not necessarily brought in really high-end quarterbacks, okay? Do you know, because I looked this up a couple years ago, where Ohio State every year brings in multiple quarterbacks who are two of the top 100 players in the country. Until Drew Aller, Sean Clifford was the highest-rated quarterback that Penn State brought in under James Franklin, and he was ranked as the 200th best player in the country. Now, with that said, I think the question comes in about style of play. Trace McSorley, Bo Prabula-style quarterback might fit what James Franklin wants to do offensively. So I may as well get to that kind of specific question. A friend of yours and mine, Steve from Columbia, sent in this question this week, Dwayne. The only time the offense really cooked under James Franklin was when we had a true dual threat quarterback. I believe he wore number 9. Why does James Franklin keep trying to jam a square peg into a round hole? If he's such a great recruiter, why doesn't he consistently recruit and play a quarterback that best suits the offense he wants to run and the offense is designed to run?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And I know where Steve's going with this. Drew versus Bo. Bo Prabula, I mean, Penn State fans are very happy for Bo and understand that he entered the portal for a chance to start somewhere else. I think what people need to think about with Bo, though, is he did not win the starting job at Mizzou. The first play of the first game, Sam Horn broke his right tibia and he's out for the season. To even give Bo a chance to play, would Bo be more successful in our system as compared to Drew? Possibly, because of his ability to run. Drew showed that he can run also, but I do believe that, Penn State fell in love with Drew's arm. The ability to throw it downfield, and if we only throw one time beyond 20 yards, then we're not taking advantage of that. I don't think, from a skill set perspective, that Bo is better than Drew. I think that Bo is a winner, and wearing number 9, which is one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time, with Trace McSorley. Everybody compares Bo to Trace, but Drew's arm is special, and we just have to find a way to take better advantage of it.
I think you hit it with that last comment. The Drew Aller arm is special, and that gives Penn State a higher ceiling. I think Bo's ability to run the ball probably gives Penn State a higher floor. But I believe James Franklin, he's after a national championship. He's right, looking for that high end that you can get from a Drew Aller. In general, though, I do agree with Steve that, when you're recruiting, go out and find that best dual threat quarterback that you could find out there.
Well, okay. And I think the other piece is the decision making. You can question Drew's decision making on where he throws it and when to throw or when to tuck and run. That was something. Go back to Trace. He just had a knack of either completing a pass or taking off and being successful, with the run. Drew sometimes makes some questionable decisions. Go back to the Notre Dame game with that throw. That part is questionable. Trace was a winner. Bo, still, to be determined. Drew, he has to take over now and be successful and make better decisions with his passes.
He still has to prove it. You mentioned the interception against Notre Dame. Watch the replay of that pass, the interception against Oregon. There were 3 defenders in the neighborhood.
Correct. decision making. That's exactly it.
Yeah. Okay. Here's an interesting one. This is Curtis from Lehigh Valley who says, before the over-the-top NIL money being paid, I was very forgiving of college players because I felt like they were learning and perfecting their game. In today's times, I find it hard to overlook the shortcomings. At the same time, I'm not certain an 18 to 20-year-old is emotionally mature enough to take intense criticism as they develop their skills. Generally, in the real world, college-age young adults don't get paid the big bucks yet and don't have their same responsibility as us older guys. Who's he calling older here? Anyway,
yeah.
Have we created an untenable situation?
Oh, my. Oh, but Curtis.
Curtis is going deep on us.
All of a sudden, I like Steve, and now Curtis is giving us this curveball here. You know, and I heard the boos, you know, in the stands, and, you know, I could never do that to a young man that's been so loyal to our program. You know, he came back, you know, he could have gone pro. He could have transferred somewhere else. Yes, he's making big dollars, but his ultimate goal was to come back, you know, with a stud running backs and a returning offensive line and do something special for Penn State. NIL isn't going away, so the money is going to be part of it. But you know, Drew had choices. He could have gone other places, and I'm thankful that he came back. I'm, you know, thankful that we have someone of his caliber, you know, leading the team. He just now has to deliver and do his best. But you know, you can't think of the money. You know, I know it's part of it, but it's still a game. He's still a young man, and we need everyone there to support the team, including Drew.
Everything that Curtis brought up from Lehigh Valley, they're young people. It's a lot of responsibility to put on them, the burden on them. Everything that he talks about as the reason why not to be so critical of these players previously when they didn't make money is still true now.
Correct.
Oh, the only difference is, They are now making money, which, and I hate the adults, and we get a lot of this, Dwayne, on our show. Listeners send in, the game's ruined. Nothing has changed. They're still the same young men. So many of them, you know, have that Penn State culture about them. They're good kids. They're great kids. If your son were out there playing football and had an opportunity in college to make $1 million doing it, you wouldn't say, oh, no, turn the money down. Of course you're going to take it. It's life-changing. But what it doesn't change is who they are, that they're still kids. Yeah, I'm a bit uncomfortable with treating them any differently. Now, what I would like to see, though, is the players, and I don't think we get it so much here at Penn State, but there are places they get very cocky, very confident, want all the adulation that comes with it, but they're not willing to take it when things go wrong. If you put yourself out there, you know, you talk trash, do all those things, you're kind of asking for it. All right, let's go to Steve in Huntington Valley. We always have lots of Steve sending in questions. I'm not even upset we lost to Oregon. We knew it was going to happen. But I say a big part of the problem was the early season schedule. You play cupcakes. It's going to take time to get used to the speed and size of real time like Oregon. And we saw that in the first 50 minutes of the game. You agree or disagree?
Well, I mean, going back to the out-of-conference schedule, we were originally scheduled to play Virginia Tech. And, you know, COVID, you know, basically eliminated that game. So did the first three games properly prepare us for Oregon? Probably not, but let's keep in mind, Virginia Tech is not that great either. They have three losses, you know, including Old Dominion. You know, what those first three games showed us was that, you know, we had weaknesses in our run game, even against, you know, FIU. You know, we had 18 yards of offense in the first half against Oregon, you know, so it's pretty obvious where our shortcomings are. If we would have played a bigger time team, would that have properly prepared us for Oregon? Maybe a little better, but we knew going into the Oregon game where our shortcomings are. You know, and looking forward at our out-of-conference schedule, does it get any better in future years? You know, we have Syracuse, Temple. You know, I'm not seeing that that's going to be a whole lot different than what we have this year.
Dwayne, I hated the out-of-conference schedule. I understand why. But one of the things, because this question has been coming up for weeks and even months, the cupcake schedule, this was not a team that I thought needed to figure out who they are. This offense, same quarterback, same running backs, essentially the same offensive line. I didn't think it needed all that extra time to get itself together, where those three out-of-conference games, I know they're glorified scrimmages, I thought having an experienced team, that wouldn't matter. Now, you know, in hindsight, hey, it's like saying they should have gone for 2 points. It's wonderful in hindsight. I'm not sure looking ahead I'd feel that way. All right, that is it, Dwayne, for Ask Dwayne. We got one more quarter to go when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Dwayne. It's quarter number four of our show. We've been talking Oregon game. We got some great questions in this week's Ask Dwayne. Dwayne, I wanted to use quarter four to now look forward, but I do need to ask you one more thing occurred during the game last week, and that was the Fire Franklin chants that went on. I know the fans are frustrated. What was your response to that?
Yeah, it, you know, where I sit in the stadium, I'm on the west side, kind of close to the student section, and it was loud. And trust me, that was well heard on the Penn State sidelines. And I hate it. I hated every part of it. I get it. Everyone is frustrated. You know, but you got a question. If you would fire Franklin, you know, who else? You know, Newt Rockne isn't standing on the sidelines waiting to be called in. And you go back and look at Nebraska. You know, Nebraska had a very successful program. They had Pelini as their coach, winning 10 games every season. That sounds familiar. And when they fired Pelini, they haven't really had success since then. So you got to be careful, you know, with this. The fact that unless you have someone else up your sleeve that, you know, is going to take us to the promised land, you know, Franklin is a good coach. He's a very good recruiter. You know, it's just that big game. And again, I get the frustration, you know, when on the bad side, when Oregon went up 17-3 and those chants started, do you think they realized 12 minutes later we were tied going in overtime? So, you know, you just have to be careful of, you know, sometimes I'll say it, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. And I think Nebraska is a very good example of that.
Yes. And a real quick note, you brought up the good point about how quickly that game changed. At 17-3, I had somebody texting me as for the next possession for Penn State, you got to replace the quarterback. You got to replace the quarterback. Well, a couple minutes later, I sent a text back. Do you still feel that way? And as far but as
if,
Frank,
if I could add, yeah. if the game would have ended 17-3, I do believe that Franklin's job would be much more tenuous than it is today. So that last quarter was huge, you know, to show that, you know, they still have, you know, a chance here.
There's still fight in the team also. And there's a couple other issues too. You brought up, you know, you want to fire Franklin. Who are you going to replace him with is the great point. There's not someone out there. The other thing, and I've been saying this for a couple years, and I always preface it, Dwayne, by saying, I'm about to say the dumbest thing ever, okay? But I still truly believe it. You don't win the big game until you do, okay? My meaning is, Jim Harbaugh, they said the same thing about him. Ryan Day, they said the same thing about him. Lucky for him, the rules changed last year, and it wasn't a 4-team playoff. It was a 12-team playoff because he would not have made a 4-team playoff last year. In college basketball, I lived in Philadelphia for a lot of years. Jay Wright, basketball coach at Villanova, that was said about him for years. So it's not an unusual thing. And by the way, there are exactly three active coaches who have won the big one, the national championship, okay? Which means there's over 100 coaches who have not won the big one yet. So be careful with that. The other thing I want to mention, and you alluded to this, Dwayne, earlier, how many recruits were there? The whiteout game is so popular now with recruits. Now, some of the kids, granted, they're there because they want to watch the game, and they may not have no intention necessarily of going to Penn State. But there are so many young guys making a decision, and they love the whiteout. It's a great show. What do you think their reaction is to the fan base screaming "Fire Franklin"?
Yeah, it's not a good look. You know, they're trying to make a decision where they're going to spend the next 4 or 5 years, you know, of their life. And when they hear the fan base turning against the active coach, it's just not a good look. And I'm hopeful that we don't hear that again.
I'm with you on that one. All right. We got half a segment left, Dwayne. How about we look forward a little bit? UCLA game coming up this weekend. Maybe famous last words. I'm not concerned about the team losing this game, but I do want to see a lot more. What do you want to see? They're traveling the West Coast to play UCLA, a bad team.
Yeah, well, anytime you lose a tough game like we just did, you can't let one loss turn into two, and you can never take anyone lightly. So they need to come in and you know, open up this offense, prepare for the next couple games, which are going to be much tougher, even beyond UCLA. So it's an opportunity to, you know, watch the films, what went right, what didn't go right, and make adjustments. Because if we don't make adjustments, 10-2 will be a stretch.
I'm with you. Let's see that offense break out, figure something out there, because you're right. I think the assumption going into this season was 10-2 is the floor. But in addition to playing in Columbus, you've got to go to Iowa and also home to Indiana. Pretty impressive team so far.
Not to mention Nebraska at home. I mean, those three games are definitely going to challenge us. So if we play like we did on Saturday, they are not a given.
No, it's not a given. But it leads me to ask the question going forward, Dwayne. Let's say it turns into a 10-2 season. I know there's still a postseason after that, but would you be satisfied with 10-2?
It's only acceptable if we make the playoffs, and that's a huge if. You know, if we go 11-1, we're in the playoffs, no questions. 10-2, we're going to be compared with all the other, I'll say, SEC teams that are also 10-2. And with our out-of-conference schedule that we've already talked about, it's not going to be looked upon favorably compared to some of these other teams that, you know, did play, you know, a power four team, you know, in the early part of their schedule. So 10-2 is not a done deal that we're going to make the playoffs. It's going to depend a lot on, you know, the performance of the other teams, especially in the SEC. So only acceptable if we make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's fascinating. A year ago, the first year of the 12-team playoffs, and I think I did do a look back to see if 10-2 would have guaranteed you playoffs, you know, year after year. And it was more so last year because I believe parity hit. You know, you had teams like Alabama losing to Vanderbilt, okay, you know, to get a third loss. But no guarantee this season is going to fall the same way. And the other thing they have to deal with is, remember, you brought up the Southeast Conference, which was screaming all offseason, strength of schedule in our conference is better than anywhere else, meaning the SEC. I don't think Penn State gets the benefit of the doubt if they're 10-2 versus an SEC 10-2 team.
I agree. And that's the concern. You know, we have to take care of business against all of these teams. And again, Indiana, Nebraska, Iowa. You saw what Iowa almost beat Indiana this last week at home. So they're always tough at home. It's going to be a challenge.
And I think the other part of this, if you have a whole bunch of teams that are 10-2 at the end of the year, as you pointed out, they'll look at out-of-conference schedule. They'll also look at quality of loss. You already brought up, you know, you lose to Oregon, will probably end up being a top five team, if not even higher. And you lost to them in double overtime. That's quote unquote a good loss. You can't go into Columbus and get blown out by Ohio State. Correct. If you lose the game, you better at least be competitive.
Correct. And the other concern I have is, you know, a typical question is, what's the best team that you beat? If that answer is Indiana, that may not be good enough. And I'm not slighting Indiana. They're a very good team. But they're not one of the blue bloods that, you know, that the committee looks for. You know, we need that quality win, and Ohio State would be a huge one. You beat Ohio State, that would be a huge feather in your cap.
Exactly. And that changes that game. I talked all off season, you beat Oregon. I don't want to say Ohio State becomes irrelevant, but you lose that game, finish 11-1, you're probably still in the conference championship game. You're definitely in the playoffs. Hey, everything's great. You lost to Oregon, though. That puts a lot of pressure on this team. It makes me think they're not going to play loose and free in Columbus.
Right. Agreed.
And you know, for me, that's the great fear there. But you still have to then take care of business. We're talking about Iowa at Kinnick, home to Indiana, a very explosive team. Hey, they've shown that's a quality team, but I'm not sure the voters will look at it that way. As you said, they're not a blue blood. So when the time comes, what will be the quality of that game? I think Indiana has a game with Oregon prior to playing Penn State. That's this week?
It's coming up, yes.
Do you know, is it at Oregon or at Indiana?
I believe it's at Oregon. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they play at Oregon this weekend.
Do you know what? I'm not sure they do. We only have a minute left, so I can't check it. I didn't notice that on the schedule, so I'm not sure. I'm not calling you a liar, Dwayne.
No. I'm guessing, too. I just know it's coming up soon.
I'll tell you what, Dwayne. I just did a quick lookup. This weekend, both Indiana and Oregon have a bye. It's the following week, the next game for each team. They play each other, and that game is at Oregon.
So 30 seconds left. You get a chance for a shout-out if you want, Dwayne.
Just shout-out. How can you not shout-out Duck Tacos? I mean, we had a great tailgate. I'd like to thank the Gerhardts who've been tailgating with us forever. That was their menu, and it was fabulous. And just one quick closing thing about the team. Pena, jet sweeps, Ross, couple of touchdowns, great. somehow we got to get Hudson involved, you know, and maybe that's part of stretching the team.
Very, very good closing comment. That's it. Thanks, Dwayne, for showing up. And thank you all for joining us. Join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.